Thanks very much. I want to just present some of the an overview of the work we've done in Australia in the space of personal electronic health records, and give you some overview of what features the system we built in Australia has in terms of from the consumer and the provider's point of view. But before I start, I've never ever shown a video in one of my presentations in 20 odd years, but I thought I'd just show you one because it's quite a nice video that sort of reflects, I suppose, the difference between the current health system and what potentially electronic health records could actually provide us. And I'll let this run and... That's quite a dramatic sort of video, but really I think shows, you know, the potential for where we're heading with connecting up and sharing electronic health records. And hopefully, you know, we can save Bill's life, as in the second part of that video, not the first part of the video. Okay, so, you know, in Australia, we're obviously a physically large country. We have a lot of a disparate health system. We have jurisdictions running health. We have federal level health, and we obviously have local health services as well. And of course, you know, that leads to the problems we face, which is fragmented information. And you know, the information is in different systems, in different locations, and usually locked up and not in a proprietary format. And of course, that's going to limit access to people's healthcare. And you know, as we saw in the video for Bill, no one knew what medications he's on. And they phoned up his daughter. She didn't know either. You know, and they probably didn't have contact to, you know, who his local GP was or other healthcare providers. So that provides a risk to his safety. And of course, it increases time and the cost to delivering healthcare to people, because most of the healthcare providers are running around trying to find information, and that's a waste of time for what they're supposed to be doing. And of course, that then also leads to unnecessary duplication of tests. They don't know what test has already been through, so they reissue the test. And it basically ends up putting additional work pressure on the whole workforce. And the last point here is about the fact that consumers and patients aren't part of the healthcare system themselves. You know, they're left out, and that's another thing we need to look at. So these are some of the drivers that we led Australia to think about how can we solve those problems. So we have a national personally controlled electronic health record system, the PCEHR. That was, I suppose it took about 2 years from the announcement to a live service. And the idea, of course, was to solve those problems. So, we want to have improved continuity of care for consumers. We want to be able to access a consolidated view or consolidated list of information about a patient. And we also want to actively enable consumers, or we call them consumers, but patients, to participate in their own healthcare, get them involved in managing their healthcare for themselves and their family. And also we'd be able to improve some diagnostics and treatment capabilities through some enhanced access to health information. So that's sort of some of the drivers, some of the goals for PCHR. And of course, all this is supported by legislation. So we had the PCHR Act through the government was passed to enable us to provide these services. So we haven't, there's backed up by legislation. If things go wrong, we can have the ability to say, well, these are the laws, these are the rules that you should be providing information about. So the National PCHR is both consumer-oriented and provider-oriented. So from the consumer point of view, as we saw in the video, it's about a lifelong record. The benefit, therefore, in that video was the fact that, if you can imagine, he had his PCHR going back his entire life. So a provider can look back in different stages of his life and find out what happened to him as a child, as an adult. It has significant privacy controls, and of course, as you'd be aware, privacy is one of the things that can sometimes kill a project. But the PCHR has addressed that quite significantly with some very sophisticated privacy controls, which I'll go through a bit later on. And of course, the consumer is more informed as well. The provider, of course, is also benefits because they now have access to greater knowledge of information about that patient, the other healthcare providers that the patient has seen, what they've done. That's all available to them in a shared record. And that can lead to a lot of efficiencies as well. And then, of course, the overall impact was what we saw with Bill, which hopefully to save his life in the end of the day. And that can have major benefits, of course, to Bill, and as well as financial benefits to the economy. So the PCHR was about a $500 million investment from the federal government and went live this year on the 1st of July. But it went live without much fanfare, so there was no advertising marketing campaign about it, because the problem, of course, you face with the PCHR is it is live, but when you log in and create yourself a record, there's nothing there. So it's pretty boring as a consumer. So what they want to be able to do is get to a point where there's enough providers that are hooked up to the PCHR and able to send information there so that when you log in as a consumer, you can actually see stuff that's useful to you. So at the moment, we're sort of in a bit of a transition phase where the people who have logged, I think there's about 15,000 people have opted in so far, and that's people who are in the industry, know about the PCHR. But there's not that many providers actually shipping documents to the PCHR just yet. So in terms of what the PCHR is made up of, I'm going to go through this a bit. I mean, there's obviously in the middle here, there's a national repository, but there's also what we call registered repository. So we can have a distributed environment. So it's not always one central site. So very large repository owners, existing repository owners with existing data, don't have to always send all the information to the national repository. They can just keep their own repository and just send the links to the national repository. And of course, for consumer, they can view information, search for it, and providers can also view information, search for it. And also from admin point, there's reporting. What goes in, consumer can enter their own information, providers can enter information, and obviously there's some information from Medicare that's already there, which can we can translate from Medicare into the PCHR, so there's one place to see this information. So I'll go through some of those bit more detail as we go through. So NITA was the, I suppose, primarily involved in designing the PCHR, in what needs to be built. Accenture built the system, so they were the agent that actually built the software. And now they've done a similar project, but not so much on the consumer side in Singapore. So NITA was responsible for just designing the requirements, the specification for the technical requirements, the privacy requirements, etc. So we went through this typical scenario, and the main thing that drove it was the concept of operation. And that basically was a document that says this is how the system should work at a conceptual level. And then from that, we then have business use case scenarios, business requirements, data requirements, security requirements, quality framework, and of course legislation. All that information was developed as part of the enterprise view. On the information side, we have all the what type of clinical documents we were interested in, shared health summaries, event summaries, the typical COC stuff, discharge summaries, prescription information, then consumer stuff as well, which I'll go through as well. So we had to design what the actual structure of all these clinical documents that was required for to interoperate. Then, of course, we had to look at, well, how would the system work technically? So all the computational servers, how do you get these documents from System A to the national repository? So how we go about building, defining the computational services or the web services. The engineering side, so that providers, vendors who have to update their software, we give them information about how to do that. And then what we call the behavior view, which is what's the clinical safety issues, privacy assessment, threat and risk assessment, and conformance requirements. So that's like literally quite a big slab of NITA was involved in that side of thing, particularly the clinical safety side. Everything we did, even the computational stuff, went through clinical safety to make sure that there was no risk or minimal risk to both the consumer and to the provider. And so that was a major part of the sign-off was clinical safety. And of course, privacy assessment, the same scenario. Everything pretty much went through the privacy assessment team to make sure there was no issues to do with privacy. Security through threat and risk assessment. And then, of course, the conformance requirements, which is what is the software. If you're a vendor, you have to build software. What are the minimum requirements you have to meet to enable you to connect to the PCHR? So there's an awful lot of design documents that we went through, a lot of analysis to get to that point. We had this quite a wide range of information to build the PCHR. So what does it look like? So this is the National Consumer Portal. So this is my record. And you can sort of see there's some, what's your information about your own personal documents, your personal health notes are here. Up here will be all your clinical documents from providers, like your shared health summaries, discharge summaries, they'll be listed there. All your Medicare record will be listed here, and all your settings are down here. So this is what it would look like if I actually had any documents. I don't have any documents, but so this is what it would look like. You'd have your shared health summaries here and information about who did it. And all your other documents as well will be listed here. The shared health summary is a new document that we designed primarily to give a sort of a snapshot as to the overall health summary of a patient. So this is something that a provider, your GP, would sit down with you and say, okay, let's look at what all your meds you're on at the moment, what are your allergies, what sort of significant problems you've had, and we'd create a shared health summary and publish that to the PCHR. So that will then enable other providers to give a good snapshot as to what your current health state is. And that's probably one. This and the event summary are two new documents that NITA had to design for sharing. And those documents are specifically designed for sharing only through the PCHR. So that's what the consumer will look like. So this is the national portal, and of course there could be other portals as well. What a clinical information system might look like from the provider's point of view. This is ZMed, which in fact announced today that their software now supports PCHR, so they can upload documents. And so this is a typical CIS that you'd be on the desktop of a GP. And you can sort of see, might not be able to read it, but this here is a PCHR documents for the patient. So it's gone to the PCHR and said, give me all the documents about this patient. It's found three documents here and found some Medicare documents as well. So you see a typical list here. So it's extracting documents from the PCHR. And then you can then view them. And, for example, this could be a referral. And this will be what your referral looked like with a header. And information. So that's a standard document for an e-referral. So the provider software is gradually being updated as we speak to enable them to interact with the PCHR and access the clinical records. The individual's PCHR, and then they can view them and download them, and also obviously upload documents to the PCHR and render documents as well. So in terms of how interactions work, so as I mentioned, we do have the national system sitting here. There will be a national provider portal, which is for those providers who don't have their own sophisticated CIS to actually interact with the PCHR, and this will be basically a way to read-only service. So it's for those who don't have the ability, or their vendor doesn't have the ability to update their software to talk to the PCHR. So at least providers will be able to read your record. Of course, CISs, whether it's a desktop or it's in a hospital, that's where a lot of the updates will be done in terms of interacting with the PCHR to download documents, upload documents, and sharing to the PCHR. From the consumer side, there'll be many portals. You know, I showed you one, which is the national portal, so at least everyone can get access to that. But there may be third-party portals. Your local health provider, your health insurance provider may also set up a portal as well, so that you get one-stop shop for all your health information. And I mentioned also repositories. So existing repositories, path labs, for example, diagnostic services, they can also set up a repository and then share information to PCHR without uploading everything to the PCHR, because that will create a lot of duplication without much savings. We do have another service in between, which is called the template service, and that's a service that tries to make sure that the documents that you send to the PCHR conform to the requirements that NITA has specified. So that is a technical conformance, so that you have the right sections in the clinical document, you have the right vocabularies, etc. And you can call that live to interact with it to say, is this the right, to validate your documents. All this stuff is sort of, the fundamental requirements to make this work are identifiers and the authentication service. So we have a separate service, which is the healthcare identifier service, which basically gives a unique identity to every consumer and every provider and every healthcare organisation. We required this here because there was no way in Australia at the moment to have a unique identity for a person or a provider that was consistent. You know, there was different identification systems if you were in different colleges, for example, but we needed a single way to do it. And we couldn't use a Medicare card number because that number could change over your lifetime when you get married and you have kids and you get your Medicare number changes. Your healthcare identifier is a number that stays with you forever. And it's unlikely ever to change unless there's some serious mistake. The NASH service, National Authentication Service for Health, is basically the ability for a provider to authenticate themselves. So yes, I am this person, I work at this organisation. So this is required, of course, so that we get trust from the CISs and the repositories for information uploaded to the national repository. So I won't talk much about those two. That's a whole other series of lectures. So the design of the PCHR, well, the PC side, of course, means personally controlled. So one of the biggest focus points of the PCHR was about the consumer. What can the consumer do and not do? It is an opt-in service. So that's the first point of access control. If you don't want a PCHR, you just don't opt in. And the second option, which I'll talk about a bit later, is what level of access control can you set? The electronic health record part, of course, is about getting providers' clinical documents into the system so that you can share them with the appropriate providers from your full range of providers. You can also add your own consumer notes as a consumer. You know, you can add your own notes, your own information, and also, as I mentioned, Medicare information. So from the provider's point of view, the PCHR is seen is not a replacement for your local CIS. It's never designed to do that. It's there to augment your CIS to be able to get access to additional information. So it's never envisioned that some providers would throw away their CISs and just use the PCHR. they will continue to use their CISs because that's the patient information, and augment the information with stuff from the PCHR. As well as that, you know, contract service providers who provide services for providers also can access the PCHR once they're properly authenticated. So really the PCHR, when we look at it, is actually designed as a document sharing system. That's really what it does. It's really about sharing documents. It's not really a clinical patient system in itself. It's never designed to do that. So the information isn't there curated by a provider, a single provider. It's there simply. So here is some information about a patient, series of documents that you may use in helping you determine how to provide care for your patient. And basically treats the originating source of the information as the truth. So it's not, it always holds copies of information. It will never ever hold the single source of information. And of course provides you the appropriate way to index those documents so that you can browse over them. There's also a way to do summary view, so we can take look at the clinical documents because we have certain structure to them. We can take out sections and summarise them and sort of merge them together. And of course we have quite extensive audit logs, so if you want to find out who accessed your PCHR, when, why, you can always view those as a consumer. The participation side, as I'll mention these control settings in a moment, but there's also emergency access, because if you do put quite tight controls over your PCHR as a consumer, a provider can also override all those given an emergency scenario. And of course that is logged and will be always checked and followed up. Of course if you start doing emergency access every day on the same patient, you'll probably expect to get a phone call from the PCHR saying, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And you might be in trouble. So there's some of the services that the PCHR. In the back end, I won't go through this in too much detail, but we call it the B2B gateway. It's probably not a very good term, B2B, in this scenario. But basically we have a number of web services. We use XDS.B if you're interested in some of these services following the healthcare service standards. So, you know, finding and gaining access to a PCHR, one of the problems you need to find is, does this patient actually have a PCHR? And if they do have one, do they have access controls that make you unable to see their PCHR as well? You've got to get over some of those barriers. Document exchange service, so you can submit documents, remove documents, update documents. View services, of course, just get a list of documents, and of course I mentioned the template service as well. So for healthcare providers, they have to be authorised users, so not you have basically have to register to participate in the PCHR, so it's not just automatic for as a provider. And you as an individual will have an identifier, which is healthcare provider identifier dash individual, and your organisation will have a healthcare provider identifier dash organisation, or HIPPO and HIPPI we call them. And they basically uniquely identify your organisation. In most cases, the provider will have a NASH certificate, you know, a smart card to plug in to say, yep, this person's authorised to access the PCHR as well. They've got to obviously have conformance software as well. The software they use has to pass conformance testing to make sure it meets all the B2B gateway specifications and is doing the right stuff, uploading, downloading documents. The interesting thing is that your access to the PCHR is organisational based. So it's at the HIPPO level. So as an individual, when you access the PCHR as a provider, it's your organisation that's being gained access to that or to the PCHR. So the documents are actually authored by the organisation. So any other individual who works in that organisation can see all those documents by the same organisation. And that enables you to, one of the benefits of that is when a consumer, say, changes the settings, say, deletes a document, you as the organisation will always see that document. You'll never be taken away from you because you are the author. So no matter what the consumer sets, even if the consumer says, this provider I want to be removed from access to my PCHR, the organisation will always see those documents because it's their documents, they are the original authors. So the clinical documents themselves, I mentioned there's the new documents we developed, the shared health summary and the event summary. The shared health summary, because it's an important document, that can't be held in a external repository. It always has to be in the national repository, because we actually use that in some cases to develop, to do dynamic views. So we want to be able to read them straight away without having to go fetch them and suck them in from an external repository. Event summary is sort of like a generic document that documents a particular encounter, you know, where one of the other continuity of care documents didn't suffice. So these documents here are primarily designed for sharing. So they don't go point to point. You wouldn't send one from one provider to another provider. You always send them to the PCHR. It's for sharing for other providers to read. And of course, your existing continuity of care documents, such as your discharge referrals and stuff like that, you would generally send them to another provider, and then you would send a copy to the PCHR. Is a general model that you do. So copies are sent to the PCHR for CAC documents. Consumer rented information, they can send. There's a document for consumer rented notes, which is just basically a simple text field. Consumer rented health summary, where you can start tracking your own medications. And an advanced care directive custodian record, where you can tell it where the where your advanced care directive actually is located for when you get seriously ill. Terminology, so we use SNOMED CTAU. We recommend the use of it for some of the for shared health summary and event summary. We want to really promote the use of these terminologies. And Australian Medicines Terminology, AMT, which is basically our terminology for all the medicines. So when we do shared health summaries, event summaries at a particular conformance level, which is level 3, I think it's 3A, oh, sorry, 3B, then you must use these terminologies in your clinical documents. Otherwise, most of the other lower levels here of conformance require more, primarily based around the narratives of the document, not so much about the coded sections. So if you've been familiar with HL7 and CDA, the clinical document architecture, a lot of these lower levels here, 2 and 3A, primarily focus around the narratives, because as I mentioned, it's a document sharing system primarily, so it's really about rendering a document on a screen for a human to read, not so much about getting data, the coded data, to be exchanged. It was never designed for that, but you can do that. You can, if you go to 3B shared health summary that has SNOMED and AMT terms in it, you can download it, you can suck them out, put them into your local repository, guarantee that they will be SNOMED AMT terms. And they meet the right requirements for CDA. So the overall sort of idea from a terms of a CAS and a national system is that in your local CAS, of course, you have a patient record and you'll be related to an individual with the individual healthcare identifier, and there may be a series of documents or notes about that patient. On the PCHR, the same consumer will have their own record here with a series of documents. And of course, because it's a shared system, other providers put in information as well. So the idea is that only some of these documents end up in the PCHR that relate to this particular provider. And some of those documents here as your own notes as a provider. So basically the idea is that you somehow, you know, when you look at your CIS, you'll see your local documents. These will be, the source will be here, but copies will be sent to the PCHR for other providers to have a look at. The other thing we do is that we do allow a consumer to state at the point of care, that document I don't want you to send to PCHR. So there's always the ability for the consumer to say that a particular document for whatever purposes does not get sent to PCHR. Of course, they can then, you know, if they was to go to the PCHR, they can log in and delete it and make it inaccessible as well. So the consumer really is a major focus of the PCHR. So as I mentioned, they must opt in is the first step, and basically when they opt in, they give default consent for documents to be uploaded to PCHR. They have a individual healthcare identifier, the IHI, which uniquely identifies them, so that there should not be any sort of cases of mistaken identity in terms of documents not being associated with the right patient. As well as that, the consumer can also withdraw at any time, so they can decide, okay, I don't want my PCH anymore, I can just go turn it off. So if they don't want to do it anymore, they can turn it off. They can also set up agents that work on their behalf as well. Particularly, there's an authorised representative which has equal access as the consumer itself, And that's basically useful for parents to look after their children's PCHR. So that you, as a parent, could get full access to the child's PCHR. And so, for example, at the moment, I have both my own PCHR and my son's PCHR, which I can just see viewed at the same time. There's also nominated representative, which is read-only access. So that's useful for example, you know, I could say to my mum, I want to have, be a nominated rep of your PCHR because I want to read your PCHR. So I want to see what's happening when you go to a doctor and read, and they upload documents. So you can get your family basically involved in your healthcare now with these different roles for your PCHR. There's also some policies as well when a minor gets to reach a certain age. So when a minor reaches the age of 14, the take control policy kicks in. And they're then asked to, if they want to take control of their own PCHR at age 14. They don't have to, but they're asked if they want to. If they say no, then it stays with their parents. But at age 18, then they must take control of their own PCHR. So that's the general policy. Of course, there are circumstances where that's not appropriate, and of course, they can be overridden as well for some minors. If you're a famous person, you can also have a PCHR in a fake name, but of course, you've got to justify why you need that. So if you're Kylie Minogue or whatever, something like that, someone famous, you don't really want a Kylie Minogue PCHR in case something happens. You can come up with a fake name, and then that's how you'll be referred to in the PCHR. So we thought of everything to cater for all problems. So access control gets quite convoluted, in fact. And primarily there's two access control modes. There's also a do not advertise mode. So you can have a PCHR and say, well, don't tell anyone I've actually got it. So it's only for your use yourself. So there's another control there. You can have a PCHR and you can also say, I want it to be hidden from everyone else to see they actually got it. But generally, there's two access control modes. There's open access, which is probably what 99% of people will use, which is basically anyone who's a registered healthcare provider can access your PCHR, can upload documents and read documents. So that will probably be, I think, you know, the majority of people do that because it's simple, easy, and that's what they really want to do. Yeah.
When you say registered, that means as long as an organisation, I've joined the PCHR.
Yes.
Whether or not this patient has ever been to see me.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so it's very open.
Yeah, very open. So any registered healthcare org in terms of register for the PCHR and you've got the authenticated everything, then you can basically, even if you've never seen that healthcare organisation, they can still read your PCHR. Typically, of course, there'll be some reason why you do that. you're not, obviously, as a healthcare provider, if you start just trying to read everyone's PCHR, then the logs will show that and you probably then get another phone call from the PCHR system operator saying, what are you doing? Stop that. And the PCHR legislation will then kick in and then you'll be fined. There's lots of serious fines in there as well about misuse of the PCHR. This one is probably when we get into access control is really the advanced side. So there's sort of two ways of doing this. Basically, if you want to have limit providers to access your PCHR, what you do is you set up a passcode. It's called a PAC. It's provider access something code. I can't remember exactly the acronym, but it's a PAC. And basically what happens is you go to your doctor, they say, okay, I want to upload this to PCHR, and you say, okay, to do that, here is my passcode. It's not a password, it's a passcode because you're sharing it with someone. So it could be 1234. The doctor types in 1234, and then they can then see your PCHR. And that organisation is then added to the consumer's provider access list. So from then on, that organisation can read and write to that PCHR until the consumer decides to turn it off. The other thing is they can also set read-write as well. So that provider can actually read and write until I say, okay, I only want you to read only and not write documents. So you can get down to read-write level access controls per provider. And of course, you can also revoke access. Say, okay, that organisation's out. Or it can set a date. So on the end of this year, this organisation gets kicked off my provider access list. So that's one level of access control. The next level is at the document level. So once you get past all this, you can state for every document in your PCHR, you can say, is it for general access or limited access? If it's for limited access, then you have another passcode to give out, which is called the PACX. So again, it's the same scenario. You go to the doctor and say, the doctor tries to find your PCHR. You can either give them the pack or give them the pack X. The doctor doesn't know which one it is. If you give them the pack X, they're going to get access to your limited access documents as well as your general access documents. If you give them the pack, they get access to the general access documents. So this will be useful if you have some disease that you don't want everyone to see about, right? So what you do is those documents about that disease, you have limited access, and you give those orgs the pack X. Everyone else, you give the pack. So that way you can limit that organization that you only want to see your documents about this weird, wonderful disease, or whatever it happens to be, to have the limited access. And of course, I mentioned about withdrawing consent per document at the point of care. So that's a lot of stuff. So this, what does it look like diagrammatically? So on your PCHR, you have all your documents, and basically, but the default will be they're all general access. You can then set some to what's called limited access. You go on, you log into your portal, and you basically say that document is limited access, that document is limited access. Over on your provider access list, I've got four providers that I've added to my list. So, they're listed there, they're at the org level. These guys, if I give them the pack, they can get access to these documents here, the provider access key. If I give them the pack X, they get access to all of the documents, including limited access documents. Over on the provider access list, I can then, for every provider, I can give them read or write access. And so, for example, here, this one here, I've decided read-only access. So I've taken away the write access. This one here is the lock, which means they got limited access. I can also set a date. So this clinic, on a certain date, will be kicked off the provider list. And there's an X here, which I can click on that and remove them completely. So that's all there's a lot of fine-grained controls there as a consumer to manage who can access my documents, which documents, as well as controlling which orgs can do that. This is not for the faint-hearted. So that's what I said. Most people will probably just have basic access, but there will be some people who want to do this. For people who have certain conditions that they want to be concerned about who sees the documents and who doesn't see documents about them. But the facility is there for them to do that. So as consumer portals evolve, and this, the interface for this is yet to be designed, people will design them, and that's where a consumer portal can compete. Yep.
So if you give someone pack access,
yep.
Do they even know you've got limited access documents in your
PC? No.
You can't even see the
back
of the document.
That's right. That's the sort of the trick, is that the provider has no idea whether you gave them a pack or a pack X, and that's your choice as a consumer. Otherwise, if the provider knew that, then of course you're telling the provider, hey, I've got hidden information about something that you don't know about. So that's part of the rationale for not differentiating between these two. It's just a passcode. The doctor or the GP has no idea that they're different. Okay, so just to summarise, just to sort of point out some of the key principles that the PCHR is trying to deliver on. The number one part is that it's consumer controlled, and I just showed you there's a lot of consumer control in there, and it's going to be useful for some people. But as again, you can also default back to the basic controls, and your typical usage won't be hampered by all these wonderful control systems. We had a large sort of process of engaging the healthcare stakeholders in the design, delivery, and operation. So Accenture, as I mentioned, was the team that built it. There's another large company who was involved in the benefits side, going out to the providers and sort of explaining the benefits of PCHR and how it can be improved, their processes, and also training them about the sort of things that you need to do, potentially to change your processes internally for managing PCHR type services. And because of the authentication of the providers, we can have a lot of quality and trust in the documents themselves. And it's also a good building of national infrastructure. And it's very pragmatic and incremental. So as I mentioned, it's a document sharing system at the moment, and you know that's a good start. But we now have the national infrastructure where we can start now looking at turning it into a future into a data-oriented service as opposed to a document-oriented service. So we can start to publish data on there, not so much just documents, which is primarily focused for human rendering or human readability. But we now have the capability now to start turning into a data service. One of the examples of that is what we call Blue Book. I'm not sure what it's called here in Hong Kong, but it's basically Blue Book or it's called different colours in different states. But it's a logbook you basically keep for your child from they're born to about 4 or 5, and you track when their weight, their height, their head circumference, stuff like that, and then you can map them to the national averages to see how your child is growing. And that's a very data-oriented type service. So, you know, in the future, we'll be able to send data to the PCHR for a consumer. And then the consumer portals can then suck that data down and provide nice graphical 3D maps, for example, for based on the data, to help the consumer understand, you know, where their child sits in terms of the national average for their age and weight. So this is a really good first step. We have the infrastructure now to start sharing more sophisticated information than just documents. But the first step, of course, is documents, and that's going to lead to a lot of successes as well. So there's going to be a lot of long-term benefits to Australia. And for those who missed the video at the beginning, you know, Bill will, you know, if he had a PCHR when he was a young boy, you know, when he had his mild heart attack when he was on the beach, hopefully that could have saved his life. But you know, at the moment, the PCHR is not a retrospective service. It's something that starts now, so it'll be collecting information from now on. So it'll help, particularly help those people who are start collecting information when they're a bit younger. And that's the end of my presentation. So I'm happy to answer any or all questions about the PCHR.